Hare Krishna. Welcome back to the study of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. We are on the third session and we are discussing the third verse of the first chapter of the first canto. So, Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Phalam Shukamukadamratadram Samyutam Bibhata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam Muhuraho Rasika Bhuvibhavukaha. So, Bibhata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. This is like the call for action in this. Drink, relish the Bhagavata Rasa. And the concept of Rasa is the most important over here. And that will form the substance of our discussion. And so basically, the Rasa literature have had their own tradition in Indian history. Natya Shastra was the book written by Bharat Muni, in which he describes how the devatas approach Brahmaji, and they asked him, please share with us a form of entertainment, of recreation that would be appealing and entrancing through all the senses. And then Brahmaji revealed to them Natya. Natya means dramaturgy. That is the way dramas are to be performed. And now we may wonder, what is there to so big about performing dramas? You know, you just go on the stage and start acting. Yeah, that is okay. But once one starts acting, one realizes there is so much more in acting that is involved. And one understands that actually acting involves learning how one can move forward in a way that creates the appropriate emotions in the audience. So, what was written by Natya Shastra Bharat Muni, that there were Anand Vardhan and many other writers, especially Bhoja, they commented on it, elaborated on it, and they developed the concept of Rasa, which was introduced in Bharat Muni Natya Shastra, but which was elaborated further, which talks about how the one can relish particular emotions by having particular stimulations. So, those stimulations, how they can be produced on the stage by the participants, by their expressions, by their actions, by their setting, and by the combination of all this, that is the whole science of dramaturgy as it is talked about in the Indian tradition. So, Rasa, in the sense in which it's talked about by Bhoja and by Bharat Muni, it is primarily emotion that is experienced within drama. And within that hierarchy, the concept of complete absorption in the drama, to the pacification, to the almost like the subordination, elimination of all other emotions, that was considered the highest. So, in one sense, that led to the idea of complete absorption, which was considered similar to absorption in the absolute truth, and that is impersonal liberation. So, Shanti, which is the goal of impersonal mukti, that is considered when this idea of dramaturgy was correlated with religion, it is considered to be equivalent to mukti. But Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is written in the 16th century by Rupa Goswami, brought about a brilliant and unprecedented correlation between the Rasa tradition and the Bhakti tradition. The Bhakti tradition especially, which was based on Vedanta. Now, now we have to understand two things over here. Rasa as an authentic inner human experience that has been there since, for all time. Since creation has been there, that has been there. But what so people have been experiencing emotions, whether it be on the stage because of what they see on the stage or because of what happens in life. We all need Rasa and we all experience Rasa. But what we are talking in the case of Rupa Goswami is, he explained how Krishna's pastimes can be seen through the prism of Rasa, and how bhakti can be understood as a process of relishing progressively pure, deep, and deeper and sweeter rasas. So now, the Bhagavatam plays a very critical role in this book, in this synthesis between the Vedantic tradition and the Rasa tradition. How does it play that unifying, joining, synthesizing role? Because we see the first verse in the Bhagavatam is talking about Dhimahi, meditate on the Absolute Truth. Now, Dhimahi is more of a passive meditation in a mood of awe and reverence. Dhimahi, meditate, meditate. But here, Pibata, drink, relish. So the Bhagavatam is going to start with Dhimahi, but it is ultimately going to urge us to do Pibata, Pibata Rasa, relish the Rasa. And in this sense, the Bhagavatam is going to be like a spiritual autobiography of Shukadev Goswami, who was doing Dhimahi on the impersonal Brahman, but when he heard Krishna Katha, at that time he became attracted. And he became attracted to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. So he moved from Dhimahi to Pibata, to relish. So this is the sweetness of the Bhagavatam, and this is what is the unique contribution the Bhagavatam is going to offer. So now, Rasa, as explained by Rupa Goswami, is not just something that is experienced while observing a drama. We are not talking about a generic human experience, but we are talking specifically of Rasa as a technical category for theological exposition. That means, within the religious discourse, how is Rasa to be understood? It is not just a secular idea that, okay, whenever any kind of drama is performed, people experience some emotions. That drama may be theistic, may be atheistic. People experience some emotions in relation with drama. Now, that is not what Rupa Goswami is talking about when he talks about Rasa. Specifically, he talks about when we have a relationship with the Supreme Lord, what do we experience in our relationship with Him? That is the focus, that is the heart of what Rupa Goswami is talking here. Now, here Rupa Goswami moves forward and explains that this Rasa can be experienced in relationship with the Absolute Truth, and different devotees experience it in different ways, and then talk about the hierarchy of various rasas. So, we have the Shantaras, Dasyaras, Sakhyaras, Vatsalyaras, and Madhuriras. The five rasas, the hierarchy is there. So here, what happens is, the Bhagavatam will reveal how we all can relish rasa. And the Bhagavatam is telling us that when we study this Bhagavatam, the purpose is to relish rasa. The purpose is not just to do something here and there, not just to do Dhimahi. So, we are meant to relish. So, that is, as we discussed earlier, we go from the negative axis to zero, and from zero we go to the positive axis. So, one of the founding contributions of the Bhagavatam is to explain that love comes from reality, and love can take us to reality. Love is so natural, so innate to our daily experience. That's the driving force of reality. We all want love. Whether it's mother's love for a child, or a spouse love for a spouse, or whether it is brother's love for a sister, whatever it is. Now, love is the driving force of all relationships, at least the foundational level. And that, the Bhagavatam explains, is also the crowning reality of existence. The driving force at our level of existence is the crowning reality at the summit of existence. And how is that? That will be revealed to the Bhagavatam through its vision of all-attractive, all-loving Supreme Person who is Rasaraj, who is Sri Krishna. So here, Pibata Rasa, Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam, Rasamalayam. So this Bhagavatam will flood our heart with rasa. So the previous verse described avrudyate, that the Lord will manifest in the heart. But what kind of manifestation will that be? Will it be an ordinary manifestation in terms of, meditate on the Lord in passive admiration? No. This is a meditation that will lead to an active transformation and engagement. So one will active, attractive meditation of the Supreme Lord. Pibata Rasamalayam. We know the Alaya refers to home or abode. So Himalaya is the place of snow. So Rasamalayam. So Bhagavatam is the reservoir of rasa. And if we just approach it properly, then our heart will become flooded with rasa. And now, the Bhagavatam brings about the synthesis. It has a lot of Vedantic exposition and philosophy, where it analyzes what is the absolute truth. Especially the Chatushloki Bhagavatam does that very systematically and profoundly. But after doing that, the Bhagavatam moves forward and it comes to the conception of Krishna, especially in its 10th canto. And in that 10th canto, it describes how Krishna is the all-attractive Supreme Lord and how loving Him is the perfection of life, and how there are paradigmatic devotees, ideal devotees, who set the standard, the model of excellence, the paragon for everyone else, especially the gopis of Vrindavan. So now, Pibata, it's talking about relish. So we can relish how there is pure love between Krishna and the Brajvasis, and we can relish as slowly, small drops of that love start entering into our heart, permeating our heart, purifying our heart, and ultimately flooding our heart when that love becomes stronger and stronger. So let's look at the verse from the start. Now this was the heart of the verse. Nigama kalpataror galitam phalam. So nigama refers to the Vedic literature. So they are like a kalpataru. They can give us whatever we want. So this is Krishna is kalpataru. He fulfills our desires. So the Vedic literature also reciprocal. Depending on how we approach them, they will reveal themselves accordingly. So if somebody approaches the Vedic literature for material benefit, that means for gaining worldly pleasures, then that's what one will get. Kamatmana swarga para janma karma phala pradam. Krishna talks about in 2.43 in the Bhagavad Gita, that people go to the Lord, people go to the Vedas for kama. Their essence is filled with kama. Their atma is as if made of kama only. Swarga para, they think swarga is the ultimate goal of life. And janma karma phala pradam, they say, oh, I'll get janma in swarga and then karma. Then what will I do over there? I will enjoy with the apsaras, I will enjoy in the Kanan gardens, and I'll just simply enjoy life. So to think like this, and the Vedas will reveal, okay, that's what you want, that's what you will get. But this Kalpataru has a... So there are various results from the Kalpataru. Krishna talks in the same section, one verse earlier, 2.42, he says, Yamimam pushpitam vacham pravadantya vipaschitaha. So dharma, artha, kama are like the pushpa of this tree. But now Krishna is telling that there is a phala. And there is a galitam phala. That is fully ripened, juicy fruit. And that is the Bhagavatam. So if you can see the Vedas to be a tree, then the flowers from them are the pushpitam vacham. They are the fruits of dharma, artha, kama. Beyond that, there's fruit. There are various kinds of fruit, but there's a ripened fruit. That ripened fruit is the fruit of pure love, which will be revealed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Galitam phalam. Now, if a fruit is very juicy, very soft, very succulent, then there's also the fear, oh, if that fruit falls, then by then it falls, it may just break and all its juice may get spilled away. And it will be difficult to relish that. No, that's why there is a special process, the process of parampara, by which process passed down. So, as we practice bhakti, our level of consciousness rises and moves upward and upward, till it reaches Krishna. And when it reaches Krishna, then we attain the perfection of our life. So, but we don't just reject everyone else. When we are relishing Krishna, we want to share Krishna with others also. So, the great souls who have reached Krishna, they form a sort of a human ladder, that is the parampara, and they pass it down to us. So, and that fruit comes down in parampara, then we can all relish it. We can relish the unbroken, the unsullied, the sweet fruit. In fact, far from getting broken or sullied, it is described metaphorically how that fruit will become sweeter. Shukamukad amritadravya samyutam. Shukamukad. So, Shuka is Shukadev Goswami. Mukhad is through his mouth. Amrita Drava Samyutam. The Bhagavatam is the... It's itself Amrita. It is the nectar of immortality because it will grant us supreme immortality. Not just the Amaratva of heaven, but Nityatva of Vaikuntha, of Goloka. So, Amaratva simply refers to living for a very long time. It doesn't refer to eternal existence. So the somaras can give that kind of amaratva to us. But the nityatva that we get by going to the spiritual world, that is actual eternal existence. So there are four kinds of things. There is martya, there is amara, there is chiranjeeva, and there is nitya. So we are all martya. Then above those who go to heaven, they are amara. They live for a far longer time as compared to us. Chiranjeevi. They live for as long as a day of Brahma, sometimes even a lifetime of Brahma. And beyond that, there are the Nitya who live forever. So drinking the Swargiya Somaras will give us Amaratva. But drinking the Bhagavatam will give us Nityatva. This is special Amrita. Amrita Dravya Samyutam. It's enriched with special nectar. So, traditionally, it is said that when the fruit is touched by the tip of by the beak of a parrot, then that fruit, because of that small contact with the parrot and subsequent exposure to the atmosphere, the fruit's taste becomes sweeter. So similarly, when this Bhagavatam is recited by Shukadev Goswami, its taste becomes sweeter. And that's why it is said that relish this Bhagavatam. Shukamukad amritadrav samyutam. Relish this Bhagavatam. Pibata Bhagavatam rasamalayam. Relish this Bhagavatam. And muhuraho rasika bhuvibhavukaha. Muhur. How should we relish it? Constantly. 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 Vishwanathachika Thakur says that actually one should keep relishing the Bhagavatam till one comes to the state of ecstasy and one faints in ecstasy. And then he says, okay, then if Muhu is constantly, if one faints in ecstasy, then one will no longer be able to relish the Bhagavatam. Then what next? He says, oh, they win in that ecstasy which is induced by the intoxication of devotion. What happens is that ecstasy is so special, so profound, so deep that one simply gets absorbed in that ecstasy. And being absorbed in that ecstasy, one relishes it so much that one doesn't desire anything else. So, even when one is unconscious at that time also, one is relishing. So, one may not be hearing the Bhagavatam. We have the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He would fall into trance when he would hear some special verses from the Bhagavatam. Especially when he hear the verse about how merciful Krishna is that he delivered even Putana, who had come with a malicious intent to kill him. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into ecstasy and he fell unconscious. And in unconsciousness, we know that he would get transported to the spiritual level of spiritual world and he would participate or observe the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna in that trance. So even at that time also, he was actually relishing. So and then afterwards, when he came out of trance, again he would say, please speak the Bhagavatam again. So that way, mohar, relish it constantly. Now, we may not be able to relish it constantly for multiple reasons. First is we have so many other worldly responsibilities which don't give us time to hear the Bhagavatam. And secondly, even when we have time, often our mind gets distracted by all our worldly responsibilities, engagements and troubles. So, how can we do this muhu, vibhata muhu, constantly drink and constantly relish? That is by purification. You know, now, what, as much as we can relish, we drink that much. And as we drink, according to our capacity will increase because we'll become purified. So, the great devotees can relish constantly. And when we can't relish constantly, rather than feeling burdened by that, rather than feeling disappointed by that, we focus on recognizing that there is an opportunity to relish it constantly. If I just continue practicing the process of devotion, so let me relish as much as I can. And sometimes when we don't feel like relishing, we take it as a medicine. Then gradually, as the medicine becomes sweeter, by purification, we'll relish it more and more. Just like sugarcane juice, which initially may not seem sweet for a jaundice patient, but as the patient keeps taking the juice, then gradually the sweetness of the sugarcane juice gets revealed. And then, rasika bhuvibhavukaha. So there is a very sweet musical meter in this. So, rasika. One should become a rasika, one who relishes rasa. And what kind of rasika? Bhavukaha. So in one sense, this seems to be the same words, but there are different emphasis to this. Bhavukaha. Bhuvi means to, on the earth, these are very special people. Bhuvi bhavukaha. Expert, thoughtful Prabhupada translates bhavukaha. And rasika, he translates, those who are full of knowledge of rasa, of mellows. So mellow was Prabhupada's translation of rasa. Rasa means the special sweetness that one experiences when one has a relationship with Krishna. That's what it specifically means in the way it is used in our tradition. In generic sense, it means emotions. So those who are, so here the idea is one doesn't have to go into a long process of naiti. Oh, not this, not that. That's a process which is followed by some people. It's a laborious process. But instead of following that process, here the recommendation is follow the process of meditation on the Supreme Lord. If one simply meditates on the Supreme Lord, the result of that will be one will become purified. And if one becomes purified, then one will relish it more, the Bhagavatam more and more and more. So, rasika and bhavuka. So here, that means, is it that this call, this Bhagavatam is restricted only for those who are rasika and bhavuka? When the Bhagavatam talks about, say, that this is meant for those who are pure devotees. Nirmat saranam. There's no need for other scripture. Kimva paredishvara. Such calls are not exclusivist. They're contextualist. So same way here, the idea is, what is talked about is a aspiration. It is not necessarily a restriction. That means that what is being talked about over here is the aspiration is that we should all become rasika, bhavuka. We all understand rasa, relish rasa, and we have the depth of the head and the heart to understand and relish rasa. Now, what does it mean to have the depth of the head and the heart? Just like if a person knows nothing about art and a person sees a very famous painting, say Mona Lisa by Leonardo da Vinci. Now one sees that, oh, it looks attractive. There's a female over there. She has an enigmatic expression on her face, almost like a smile, and she looks quite attractive. So one may give one glance, two glances at that, and I think, okay, this is good, okay. But one who is a connoisseur of art, that person can understand much better what is going on. Oh, this expression, these eyes could have been depicted in some other way, but they have been depicted in this way. So one looks at every single detail in the picture and understands that it has a significance. And the combination of all those details have produced a particular effect which would not have been produced if the artist had not taken that much care to depict all those details in that particular way. So similarly, here what the Bhagavatam talks about is that it's a process by which we develop rasa. Our spiritual sensibility, our capacity for devotional aesthetic experience increases as we become bhavuka, as we become rasika. So, another example is that, a simpler example perhaps, more relevant example is, say, of cricket. Now, somebody, say, has come from the from, say, Somalia or somewhere, a place where nobody knows about cricket, nobody's played cricket. And then somebody that person sees that these people are so absorbed in cricket. You know, what is there? There is one person running and there's another person swinging with a stick and there's a big piece of stone, circular stone that is being hurled. What is going on? And then there's somebody running after that circular piece of stone. What is going on? And sometimes the same action is being played and replayed and replayed. And then, you know, okay, this person put a stick over there. But okay, what was the stick? Why is that same stick being seen again and again and again? But then, one who knows the game of cricket, one understands, oh, actually there are so many ways in which that ball can be thrown. Somebody can be off-spinner, somebody can leg-spinner, somebody can be a medium-pacer. That is just a specific general way in which that person bowls. And then within that also, specific balls can be bowled different ways. One can be off-cutter, another can be a leg-cutter. And the bat, there's a batsman who's holding a bat, but there are so many different ways in which the bats can be held. Batsmen have different stances. And there's so many different ways in which the bat can be swung. And there are so many different shots that can be made. And then, say there is a run has to be scored, and the batsman has to come in time into the crease. So then, that same thing of the bowler or the fielder throwing the ball, and the ball hitting the stumps. And then, has the batsman come in time or not? Now that may become a object for our microscopic observation for the umpire, who's for say if there's going to be a third umpire who's supposed to decide it. So just as when one understands the subject more and more, then one can relish it more and more. So now, of course, the difference between understanding the material subject and understanding Krishna is that the relish from Krishna stays forever. The relish from material subjects doesn't stay forever. But the simple point is that the extent of infatuation and consequent absorption that a cricket fan can have in cricket, cricket novice can't have that. So same way, just as how does a person become a cricket fan? One reads about cricket, one talks about cricket, one mixes with those people who are infatuated with cricket, and soon one will also get the infatuation. Similarly, if we associate with those who are intoxicated with Krishna, those who are in love with Krishna, and we hear what they're speaking, we talk what they're speaking, we contemplate what they're speaking, then we will understand so much more. We will see, sometimes some devotees will recite the same verse dozens of times. And initially, if that devotee has a sweet recitation capacity for that verse, then we may also like the sweetness of that recitation. But then we may say, okay, now it's enough. I've heard this verse enough times. But sometimes, someday, the same devotees may keep reciting the same verse again and again. Why? Oh, this word can mean like this, this word can mean like this. And then, if we take this word to mean like this and this word to mean like this, then this particular import is revealed. And then, by this glory of Krishna is understood. Oh, this is so intoxicating. And like that, as one develops a closer relationship with the Bhagavatam, then one can relish the Bhagavatam more and more. And we see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to hear the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, hundreds of times, again and again and again. Why? Because he felt that there was so much relish in those pastimes. Why was he feeling like that? He was feeling like that because he was so absorbed in the world of the Bhagavatam that every contact with the verse revealed some newer, deeper, richer facets of that world of the Bhagavatam and of the central hero of that Bhagavatam, that is Krishna and his exalted devotees, whether they be Dhruva or Prahlad or whoever, or the gopis of Vrindavan, and topped by Srimati Radharani. So in this way, by understanding how the Bhagavatam is something which is meant to be relished, pibata, rasak, rasamalayam, we can try to develop a relationship with the Bhagavatam. And especially those who are relishing the Bhagavatam deeply, if we associate with them and we hear from them, then we will also develop a taste for the Bhagavatam. And this rasa, which comes from hearing the Bhagavatam, offers the topmost fulfillment to the heart. Nothing offers fulfillment to the heart like the fulfillment offered by this Bhagavatam. And gaining that fulfillment is our life's greatest aspiration. And by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, he has given us Bhaktivedanta purports and he has introduced us to a whole tradition which is written, spoken, and cherished and relished in Bhagavatam for so long. And by he has given a community of devotees to us. And that association gradually, all of us can also become Rasika and Bhavukaha. Thank you. We'll continue in our next session. Hare Krishna.